I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
Anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair, and
my knee hurts.
My arms are kind of rash.
Is that a rash?
And I had Asian food, and that makes me
What's
feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant.
Welcome to another Definitely Dying. Thank you for listening. I hope whatever you're doing right now, whether it's driving or doing your dishes or just sitting and paying full attention to this podcast, as you should be, I hope you're enjoying it. Ben, how you doing?
It's a little strange. I would say it's a strange time in the history of our possibly great nation.
Oh, yeah. Trump is the president-elect.
Yeah.
I think we owe you guys a bit of a peek behind the curtain of how Definitely Dying is made.
Right.
While I know that it may seem like this podcast deals with the news of the day in such a timely fashion that we only could be recording every week on the week. It's not true. We record every other week, two episodes back to back.
Yeah.
And we record them a little bit in advance.
Yeah.
Because we're committed to getting you a new episode every week.
That's true. So this is the first one that will be coming out after the election. So, yeah, if it sounds like we were unaware of the fact that a tyrant took over the office of our president. Well, he hasn't taken over yet. He's currently the president-elect.
Yes.
And I think we still have a couple of weeks from when this comes out before he's permanently placed into the ranks of United States president. But so, yeah, if it sounded like we were being blasé by never addressing this, or maybe at times making jokes based on the fact that we assumed that he would never win the presidency, don't assume that that we're not taking this seriously. We take it very seriously. Maybe so seriously that we we prefer to give you a nice, healthy dose of comedy in place of any great discussions on the subject. But we are aware, and for all of those who have been and will be disenfranchised, we feel for you.
Yeah,
Definitely Dying supports you.
Yeah. I guess that's all there is to say about that.
Yeah.
For now.
So, just in the future, if it seems like it seems like something big happened and we're not aware of it, it's just we recorded way in advance.
Yeah, and if we seemed very happy and carefree the past few weeks, that's because those are the voices of people living in a pre-Trump America.
This is very true.
It's a very sad time capsule.
Yeah. Sorry to burst your bubble. We're not reporting live from the scene of crimes. But we just wanted to take a second to address the state of America. And I'm glad/sad that we did.
Yeah. Should we start the podcast?
Yeah, let's start it.
Let's do it.
All right. Folks, hey, we're really excited about the guest we have for you today. He currently writes for At Midnight. You've seen his stuff on Comedy Bang Bang. You've seen him on Funny or Die. He's one half of the tremendously funny podcast, The Doughboys. Nick Weiger is here. Thanks for joining us, Nick.
Hi, guys.
Hey. Hi, Nick.
What a treat.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you.
I was really impressed at your subtle iced tea or iced coffee sip off mic.
I'm trying to, because we do a lot of snack testing and beverage tasting on our podcast, which is food fixated.
Mm-hmm.
And the comment we get is that chewing into the microphone, for some people find it like arousing, like an ASMR.
Yeah.
But then other people find it disgusting.
Uh-huh.
Like people
will
be like, I can't listen to this podcast anymore. They're fucking chewing into the mic. It makes me sick.
Yeah.
And so we're like, for both of those reasons, we're like, okay, I've got to habituate myself to not take sips or take bites into the microphone.
Yeah.
It's still hard to control fully.
Sure,
but
sure. I'm a perpetual dry mouth guy, so I've had to really master that practice as well.
Right.
Well, we're a death-centric podcast, so what we found out is that people do like it when you make, like, shrieks and moans into the microphone. In fact, it's our most popular game.
Yeah.
pretty much ones that have no visual whatsoever.
They
just get to listen to us be terrified of dying. In its most docile forms often. Yeah.
So, Nick, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
How much do I think about it?
Yeah, how much do you think about it?
Mm-hmm. 10.
Oh, right.
I don't think we've had a 10.
No, I don't think it's our first 10.
Either people might be lying.
I think about death every day.
In
really?
What form?
Yeah.
Can
just,
you
yeah.
walk me through a day and all the times you think about death?
Like the inevitability of it is just like, okay, there's a finality to this life.
Sure.
Like there's going to be an end point.
Yes.
And I don't know when it's going to come. It could happen at any time. It
yes.
could happen today.
Yes. Yeah.
And it could have happened driving over here from Santa Monica to the studio here in Hollywood. It could, like, I just think of that. And then also the permanence. I'm just like, okay, we recently had, like, a momentous news event.
Yes. Sure.
And at the time of this recording, we're a couple weeks removed from, you know, the presidential election, the surprise outcome, which we all know about. Mm-hmm. But, like, okay, let's say I died just before that.
Yeah.
I would not know, and I would never know. That would just not be a part of my reality.
Yeah.
In fact, reality, like just the idea that at some point I will stop being a part of the reality and the world will continue without me.
Mm.
Like I think about that all the time.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. Because it's like, okay, because here's the thing. The comparison I make is, have you ever left a job and then you stop by a few months later just to check in with everybody and everybody's going fine?
Yeah.
That's what the world's going to be like after you die.
Yeah.
It's like there will be a period of like, oh, goodbye. Oh, this person's gone. Oh, what a bummer.
Right.
But then eventually people are just going to move on with their lives. Everything will carry on pretty much as it was. And your ultimate irrelevance in the universe, let alone, I mean, like the universe is one thing, but also just society.
Yeah.
Is just like it's so underlined by the fact that eventually you're just not going to be a part of it, but people will just go about their businesses because what else are they going to do?
Does that give you comfort or does that make you sad?
There was a time, I would say probably 2013, I was like terrified by that. And
really?
I would have to pull my car over. I was just so like anxious about like, oh my God, at some point there's just going to be like darkness and then nothing and I will not exist anymore. And I will not even have a moment. I talked about this with my wife before of like, I won't even have a moment to like reflect on everything.
Right.
Like there's not even a moment to just sort of like look back and be like, oh yeah, all that happened. It's just like a safe lands on you and it's, that's it.
Yeah.
You
okay. So
you don't have a set. I envision my death is only happening in a cartoon form.
Yeah.
I'm either a safe is going to fall on me, a piano, my tongue is going to roll out and get caught in a propeller.
Yeah.
A spinning bow tie is going to strangle me to death. But anyway, I think about that, like, just you don't even have a moment to reflect on what's happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that would terrify me. But then it reached a point where I'm like, okay, now I'm comforted by the fact that this will end. That I can just release that amount of control of just, like, whatever happens, I can take things one day at a time and just sort of absorb everything that life is going to throw at me.
Yeah.
Knowing that eventually, no matter what, that's it. You know, that's all. This is all this is.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of like when I get really anxious or when I get really freaked out by what's going on in the world or what's going on in my life, just the fact that there eventually is going to be an end point and that I'm just going to be able to sleep forever. That just kind of comforts me.
Because
I like going to sleep. I'm maybe at my most anxious when I'm trying to get to sleep.
Yeah.
I have insomnia. I have a lot of sleep problems. But I'm like at my most serene when I wake up in the morning.
Really?
It's just like, oh, I had drifted off into sleep. I wake up and I'm just sort of like, oh, it's a new day. And just kind of knowing that I'm going to like go into that slumber and I'll never have that feeling of coming out of it.
Yeah.
But I'll just sort of be like, that's going to be my final state and that'll just be it forever. And I'll never have to worry about it.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I noticed that that I started embracing the morning when I became a man of routine, that I really established like a set of like 8 to 10 things that I need to accomplish every morning. And if I do those things, then the rest of the day goes really well. You strike me as a man of routine. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned my sleep problems.
Yeah.
And that's probably the medical issue that I talked to you a little bit before the podcast, Ben. I had asthma as a child. That was my big issue as a kid. But as an adult, it's all been sleep problems. It's been insomnia and then late onset insomnia, which are kind of related. Either just I can't go to sleep at all, or what happened? And this is actually, you're getting me in a very hazy state right now. Because I had late onset insomnia last night. I went to bed about midnight and then woke up just shy of 3 a.m. and then just couldn't get back to sleep. I've been awake the whole time. So I haven't been back to sleep. So like that happens to me probably. It used to happen to me probably once a week, and now I'd say it's more like twice a month.
Okay.
So the frequency has gone down a little bit, but it's still just a thing that happens to me. And so, where was I going with this?
Are you a man of routine?
As far as the routine was, yes. That's what initiated this. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm a little hazy. Yeah, I try to maintain a routine because it helps my sleep problems. I saw a sleep specialist about this. You know, there's the – like everyone I went through those – everyone who has a sleep deficiency, you go through issues with the – you take the battery of sleep tests. I did the sleep apnea thing. I don't have sleep apnea, but I do have issues just like actually falling asleep. And one thing that the sleep specialist told me to do is just to like try to maintain a regular sleep schedule. Now, you guys, we're all in the same field. We know how impossible that is based on your various jobs that you have.
Yes.
You know, you just have things that are scheduled at different times. Mm-hmm. You have late nights, you have early mornings. Mm-hmm, it's very inconsistent.
Sure.
Yes.
And it's also, too, my current job, I have to be in at 7:30 in the morning.
Oof.
And so that's like a 5:30 wake-up time for me with just like getting ready in my commute and everything. So that's like, am I going to get up at 5:30 on Saturday and Sunday to maintain that routine?
Right,
you know, am I going to go to bed at 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. rather every single night?
Yeah.
You know, it's tough to maintain that routine, but I try as best as possible to try to, you know, maintain healthy sleep habits.
Sure.
And where do you have a couple questions? So when did your sleep problems start?
I'd say puberty was when I started really having a lot of trouble falling asleep. And then the late onset insomnia was probably early adulthood. That feels like roughly the timeline. Definitely both were manifesting themselves as a teenager.
Okay.
And are they is it anxiety related? Like, is there a reason, like, when you have like sleep issues like that, is it the kind of thing that you can like trace to another thing, or like do you have an understanding of where it comes from, or is it just like a thing like asthma where it's like, you just have this?
Yeah, I wish I did. I wish I had more of an understanding of this is the cause and this is how I can control it. But so much of it is just, I feel like it's just an active mind. Maybe that's anxiety related. I'm not sure what it is, but just when I can't go to sleep, I can't turn my brain off. And when I wake up in the middle of the night and I can't go back to sleep, it's the same thing. I just wake up and I'm just awake.
Yeah.
It's just, I might as well have, you know, I might as well have heard the rooster crow and the sun will be shining. Like, it feels like morning to me, even though I'm very tired. It just feels like I'm fully conscious.
Does something wake you up, or like, does something have to wake you up, or do you wake up on your own randomly?
No, I'll just wake up on my own randomly.
Oh.
Me too.
That's what it is.
Basically.
Really?
Yeah. I would say by 5 every morning.
Wow.
But I just think I'm sensitive to everything, like anything that, you know, like I wear a mouth guard at night, and they'll
me
just
too.
Like, yeah, and then it's
me
every,
too.
Like around, yeah, we're mouth guard people.
Yeah.
Zig mouth guard? Oh,
no.
All right.
Zig, you gotta get a mouth guard.
Zig, you gotta get a mouth guard. You don't do any night grinding?
So what are you doing to wake up at 5 in the morning when my mouth gets too dry from mouth guard? Are you just sleeping right through my dry mouth? Rude.
I hate the night guard.
I hate it.
It drives me crazy. And I didn't wear it in defiance for a few months. My teeth ground so much.
Yeah.
I could like feel every morning I was just in pain. My jaw was like, I had to like pop my jaw back in.
Oh, yeah.
It was and I was just like, but I fucking hate the night guard so much that I just put up with that a little bit. And then that got so bad.
Yeah.
My teeth were so sensitive that I'm like, I got to stick this goddamn night guard back in. But that's like the kind of thing that makes me crave death.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, now I have to put this fucking night guard in my mouth, which I hate every night to go to sleep. Every night of my goddamn shitty life, I have to put this night guard in. And at some point, I won't have to. I'll put that night guard in for the last time.
Yeah.
And then they'll take it out of my corpse during my autopsy.
What happened?
They're waiting
so long
to take it out of your mouth.
Right.
I feel like you said in 2013 you were scared of dying.
Yeah.
And in 2016, every day you crave death.
Yeah.
What happen?
I don't know if Nick? I crave death as much, but I think about it. Like, it's, yeah. I think about it constantly.
Yeah. And you think... And,
is that when you started Doughboys?
Yeah.
What happened? What has something... Like, can you think of what has changed your attitude on death? Like, what's made you think about it more? And also, what's made you think about it more in, like, a more kind of... comforting way as opposed to a terrified way?
I think because I just turned it over in my head so many times when it was first, like, 2013 was probably when I had that kind of, let's see, I would have been, I think it was 32 when that was hit, when I kind of had that existential crisis of, maybe it's an early midlife crisis, whatever it is, but that moment of like, holy shit, I'm going to die. And that was just something I had to like see therapists about because I'm just like, oh my God, I'm going to fucking die. And I think, but I think just turning that over in my head enough and like processing and accepting it made me sort of understand like, okay, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And I saw it as less of a foreboding thing and more of just a thing that's inevitable.
Yeah.
I think just by virtue of it just occupying such a presence in my brain for so long is what caused me to sort of just convert to, I don't know, it's some stage of grief, I bet, right?
That's acceptance, comes down to.
I mean, I guess, so Can we scroll through your 2013 and see if there's anything that that we could stumble upon in like what happened in 2013 that you would say was of greatest significance in your life?
It's hard to remember the exact the exact beats of that year, but I will say that that was a year I had a lot of professional success, also professional. Like profession-related anxiety. Like I had a few things going on where I was like, oh, I have a ton of responsibility now. Yes. I have a ton of shit that I'm doing, and I'm working a lot of hours. And that was kind of like the synergy at which I was also thinking about, you know, mortality a lot.
Sure.
Success also makes me fear for my physical well-being.
Sure.
Like, and it's like – it always seems real when I like it always seems very legitimate, like in my mind where like something like even like after like, I mean, this is like not a huge big deal, but like, you know, we on a previous podcast, I think we talked about going to that New York Television Festival with this project that Nick directed.
It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun making that.
It was great. Oh, yeah. Nick, you did a great job.
God bless you.
But so we made this web series and it like won a little award. And then genuinely the next morning, I drank too much beer, threw up a lot, but then was confident that I had gone septic and was going to die. Wow. I was just like, ugh, I was like, this is how it happens. Like I have like a lot of things that like I need to do in the next week. We have like a lot of meetings. Yeah. We have like a lot of like stuff going on, but it's too bad. Because I'll die.
Right.
And like it's all like I'm always linking the two, or even if I like have to like, you know, like wake up early to go like shoot something or do a job, I'm always the night before confident that like I have like food poisoned myself or like I'm very fearful of doing something that's going to incapacitate me physically to an irrational point.
Does professional anxiety exacerbate your sleep issues at all? Like, do you ever have sleep problems as a result?
Yes.
In what form does that occur for you?
For me, it's like I was a heavy, heavy, heavy sleeper for my whole life, and I'm still more in that camp.
Right.
But when I, very specifically, when I have to like get up for something the next morning, and like I get in a loop where I am thinking to myself, I have to go to sleep, and then thinking to myself, I have to go to sleep will keep me up.
Right.
And then I'll just like start spinning my wheels and I won't be able to like, it first happened for the worst time before my wedding. Cause it was like, I was like, I gotta go to sleep. I gotta be awake tomorrow. This is an important day. And I just, nothing I could do could make me fall asleep. And that had never happened to that degree before.
Right.
And but now that I know it can happen, it happens more because now it's like a thing I'm afraid of.
Right. Sure, like, because I have that exact same issue. Ben, do you have that happen to you?
I've figured out how to overcome it in myself, but I had it for pretty much my entire life until about a year ago.
What
is your
do?
Trick?
It's the exact – it's the reverse of that thing that I said about finding a way to achieve calmness in the day by having that list of things. But it works in just the opposite. I have a set of things that I have to do in order to go to sleep, and I dread doing those things so much that I just pass out. And one of them is putting that night guard in my mouth because I know it's going to be such a bad thing.
Yeah.
I will often fall asleep before I get up to do that last thing, and it's been like it's been a life changer. But up until that point, the mere thought that I had to wake up at some point the next day would paralyze me in that bed with my eyes wide open,
right,
incapable of. And I'm not somebody who can think myself into doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, once I've decided that I have to come up with a plan to achieve something, I for whatever reason I go into a state of paralysis. If there's like,
yeah,
but somehow that worked to my benefit when it came to going to sleep at night. It was just like, yeah, I have to do, I have to set the alarm. I have to fill up the cool air humidifier. I have to floss. I have to brush my teeth. I have to turn off all the lights. I have to lock the doors. And somewhere in that process, I grow so tired of being I grow weary of being a victim of my own routine, and I just pass out and then hope I die.
Do you just fall asleep on your couch, or where are you sleeping?
On the couch, or okay. I'll like lay down in bed. Before bed, I watch an episode of The Family Feud, and at the commercial breaks, I go and I do, you know. So commercial break rolls around. So we got two games of The Feud. We go to commercial break. I floss.
You are a man of routine.
I'm a man of routine. Yeah. Hey, my man Steve Harvey puts me into a more a calmed state, and yeah, those commercial breaks hit. I get up and I do a thing. One step. So there's like, you know, the Family Feud's gonna have, I think, five commercial breaks.
Right.
There's five things I got to fit in there, and somewhere before somewhere before they go to Fast Money, I'm out.
You know what my issue with the Steve Harvey Family Feud is? I think Steve is so funny, and he's like very good at it. But I think they kind of figured out the gimmick.
Yeah.
I think they're just like trying to force it. So yes, like you'll watch the show and it'll be like, name something hard that you'd put in your mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We know what you're fishing
right.
for.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like you don't have to have one of these moments happen every episode.
No.
It's
right.
like they got a note from the, I don't know, it's like
yeah.
they got a note from an EP or something
yeah.
like, we need more of this. And they're
yeah,
like,
yeah.
okay, we'll try
yeah,
and make
great,
it happen.
Great. Yeah. It's you can see it coming from
right.
too far away
definitely.
Now.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like every episode there's at least one question that sexualizes Steve Harvey, too.
Yeah.
Like that seems to be his bread and butter.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know that's right. Yeah. But yeah, that's part of my
But that fact, show specific, you're like watching it on TV.
Yeah.
So like you have a very rigid time you're going to bed.
Oh, well, it's not I just record it.
Oh,
you
record
it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's a sad fact about me, guys. I'm recording.
You're recording
the Family
Feud.
I'm recording two episodes of the Family Feud today, and they're not building up on my DVR.
Now, have you developed any techniques, Nick, that have like helped you cope with this?
No. I mean, well, no is my short answer.
Yes.
When I met with a sleep specialist, the one thing he had me do that I've kept up, that I maintained, I've tried a few different things. And the one thing that I do find works to some degree is it's very strange, but it's putting on sunglasses a half hour before I go to bed.
So like it's like
light therapy. And basically what he's saying is like the ideal is you've got your lights off in your home or your lights dim in your home.
Mm-hmm.
You're not looking at any screens.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be honest, you know, in this day and age, the idea that you're not going to look at your phone for a half hour before you go to bed is
right.
just impractical.
Yeah.
So you put on sunglasses, it kind of simulates it. It actually works quite well. And then I also had, it was the dorkiest thing in the world, but I had a light visor that I would put on in the morning that would shine UV light directly into my eyes.
Whoa.
And that would help with the other issue of like I'd wake up and feel very groggy because
yeah.
just like my you know, if I don't get enough sleep, I just feel...
Yeah.
And it would work like caffeine. It would work really well. And then eventually it broke. So, and I didn't want to buy another one. It was like $80.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I had that for a little bit. But I was also taking melatonin, and then eventually I got desensitized to melatonin.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
it just didn't really have any effect on me. I did start switching to showering at night. And that seemed to make a difference.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, this was another thing that came from the sleep specialist of like, you shower at night, and I think it just, I don't remember what it was. I think it's warming your body up.
Yeah.
Oh. I think that's what it is that puts you in kind of a sleepy state. So I try to do that as much as possible.
How's your wife sleep?
She pretty much sleeps like a log, but we don't go to bed at the exact same time. And so right now, for a long time, her schedule is earlier than mine. And, you know, I would have, I'd usually get into work at 10 a.m. or sometimes even later, and she always has to get into work at 8:30. And that she's had the same job for a decade. Mm-hmm. So her morning time has never changed. Now I get into work earlier than her. Now I go to bed earlier. So that's a little bit of a reversal. But yeah, she sleeps pretty well when she falls asleep.
Right.
I mean, she has sleep problems like anybody, but I don't think she has any sort of chronic insomnia like I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
Not to fully speak for her, but I think I'm sure she has
her own
sleep
issues. She's been keeping her chronic insomnia from you for years.
But she definitely has, like anyone, she has sleepless nights. She has times when she can't sleep, but I think it's not as much of an issue as it is with me. And she's very sympathetic and very much a facilitator of me trying to get as much restful sleep as possible. The other thing that she has to deal with, and this is her specific burden. There are many burdens in being married to me, but this specific sleep-related burden is, I guess this happened to me 2 nights ago, but I have night terrors. Sleep paralysis. I have both of those. And so she has to deal with me in both of those states.
Oh.
And the night terrors, when it manifests itself, is like I'll wake up. I'll just kind of do what she says I do, which I don't have a memory of. But I'll just like sort of be sound asleep and just wake up and go.
Oh no!
Like just be like
terrifying.
And like breathing super, like can't breathe, breathing super heavy, panning like that, and then like my eyes are like wide open.
Yeah,
she has to like grab me and be like, it's okay, I'm
so
here,
scary.
It's me. Then eventually I come out of it. And sometimes she'll take me out of it, and then I'll fall back asleep, and I won't know what happened until the next morning when she tells me about this incident.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Wow. Yeah. So
I have that happen. And then also the sleep paralysis, which is just I will feel like I can't, I'm awake, but I can't move.
Oh, that's
I can't
so
breathe.
Scary.
And,
oh, you can't breathe.
Yeah, I can't. I guess I am respirating, but it feels like I can't take any air into my lungs.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I just feel totally still, and it's terrifying. And I guess those incidents only last for about 90 seconds in real time, but it feels like 40 minutes.
Like,
it feels like forever.
Like a fist fight or something. Yeah. Like they seem like they last forever, but
in
reality.
But she's hyper-conscious of that issue, so she'll sometimes notice that and get me out of that, too.
So she'll just know you'll just be, like, lying.
Yeah, she'll
like,
be able to.
Like, your eyes are open?
Right, she'll perceive that that's what's going on.
Oh, man.
And not every time, but there are definitely times when she's rescued me from that.
Makes me wish I had a wife so I could find out what happens to me at night.
Right.
This is the first time I ever wanted that. That's the reason I ever wanted someone to love me.
My husband Ben, he just recently got a Fitbit.
Oh,
and
fun.
Yeah, it's honestly, I've never seen him happier. He's very excited. It's really
Are you worried this is gonna be like a her situation? You're gonna be usurped by this Fitbit?
I mean, he is like going out to lunch with Fitbit and like he's speaking to it a lot. He just like Ben like loves to gamify things.
Right.
So he just like loves having like even just like typing in how much water he's drinking, like he really digs and like but one thing that I've been very curious about also is just like, you know, it tells you like how restless you were in the night. So now like every morning I'm always like, how'd you sleep? And he like shows me like the chart that like shows how many times he's been restless. And like, because I am like sort of perpetually trying to like, you know, just like improve everything. So it like runs really well. Like I like keep trying to like figure out like if he has a night where he was like restless 9 times, I'm like, well, what did we eat right before bed? Or like, well, I'm like just like always trying to figure out like why he was like restless or not. But most of the time I've learned that it's like, according to the Fitbit, Ben is like restless probably like 9 times a night and like wakes up like, you know, 1 or 2 times a night, which I don't know whether that's normal or not, because I've asked if I could borrow his Fitbit for one night to see how I sleep, and he said no. Because he doesn't want to have an inaccurate data point in his like track of Fitbit. But I also don't want a Fitbit. Like, I just want to try it once. So I have no sense of whether that's normal. Does anybody else know?
No.
I honestly don't know. I don't know what the right wake-up rate is.
Yeah.
I wake up once every night. And sometimes I just can't get back to sleep. But at least once a night, I always wake up.
Yeah, me too.
I can't remember sleeping through a full night in years. Yeah. Unless I'm just completely passed out from alcohol.
That's
the one thing that will definitely knock me out is just like drinking until I pass out.
I guess that was the part that I maybe neglected to mention when I was describing mine is that I smoke a tremendous amount of weed and then go through a series of steps that would be impossible to remember after you smoked a tremendous amount of weed.
But does that help your sleep? Like, was there a time before you were smoking weed when your sleep was different?
It's been a long time. I mean, one of the main reasons that I started was because it. My thing is that I don't know if it would have a condition attached to it. But what happens to me is when I go to sleep, if I'm clear headed, if I'm sober, I will have a nightmare, and then I'll wake up from that nightmare, and I'll go back to sleep maybe 10-15 minutes later, and the nightmare will pick up as if I pushed play on. On the DVD, like, and so that nightmare, and it's always a different nightmare, but they're always themed around someone kidnapping and trying to hurt my younger brother.
Oh,
Jesus.
And so I started smoking. So the two types of marijuana are sativas and indicas are usually supposed to be good for sleeping at night. And so when I started, I smoked a good amount of indica at night because whether you don't have dreams, whether you don't actually go into that REM state or you just don't remember them, I would not have these like panic inducing nightmares. So I just stuck with it because nightmares, it'd just be like, you know, if somebody was like, you know, nightmares off or on, you would just say off every time. You'd be like, let's turn those off. And so that's what it did for me. Turn them off.
I haven't smoked marijuana since college. And I didn't even really enjoy smoking it then.
Yeah.
But I've heard that that can help with sleep issues, and I've thought about it. But I'm such a square, like I don't even know how to go to a dispensary.
Sure.
I'm like, I'm overwhelmed by that thought.
Mm-hmm.
I'm such a square that like my parents have been like, hey, maybe you should try medical marijuana.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like my 60-year-old mom is emailing me trying to get me to do something to help my sleep issues. And I still just like, I don't know. Like, do I have to lie to a doctor? I don't know what to do anymore.
Isn't it legal now?
Well, it's legal, but also you just wouldn't have to lie. I mean, that would be one of the things that they would.
Yeah, I guess they have a legit reason.
Yeah, that would be. There's
you'd be like, oh, my back.
Right.
My back, I have a bad back. I need to smoke.
We have a mutual friend that would be good to talk to on this subject. I don't want to out anyone on the podcast.
Okay.
I don't know why I would think that if one of our friends' parents listen to this podcast. But it's entirely possible. And I think he goes through sort of something similar. It is one of those things where ultimately I think no matter what our situations, we're just looking to turn off the brain in some way. And so it's like a series of steps that each individual would have to take to turn off their brain. I'm okay with the getting the stoned part. I kind of giggle myself to sleep. But
To Steve Harvey.
Yeah, it's like, I'm funny. I think for other people, that's the worst part of it. What I consider the best part is for them the worst. And if you were to try it, maybe the route would be something that didn't get you high. It just had the sort of the medicinal effects.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Do you have a hard time turning off your brain when you're awake, or is this like a nighttime problem?
Good question.
I wonder if I have some undiagnosed adult ADHD or something like that, because I definitely have trouble focusing.
Huh.
I have trouble, like, I can't focus at all, followed by periods of intense focus.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like, I have periods where I'm just, like, super, I'm so locked in, and I'm just, like, extremely productive. Productive even if what I'm doing is unproductive. Like, I'm either, like, I have a moment where I'm, like, I'm super into work, and I'm just getting work done, and I'm just knocking that out, or, like, I'm playing this video game, and I'm totally locked into playing this video game. Like, I can get very fixated on whatever the task is.
Yeah.
Whether that's something that's good for me or not.
Right.
Yeah.
And very obsessed with it, but also then I have times when, like, when it comes to like, oh, I need to focus on something where I know I need to direct my mind towards something, then my mind is going elsewhere. And I'm like thinking about a bunch of different things at once. And I'm looking at my phone for 1 second. I'm looking at TV for a second. I'm talking to somebody for a second. I'm not listening to what their response is. You know what I mean? My brain is everywhere at once.
There's some syndrome that, it's like a very modern syndrome, meaning that like, I don't know if it's a real thing or not. They talk about it nowadays where, and they blame it on technology that people are incapable of remembering or becoming incapable of remembering why they walked into a room that they just entered. Do you find you have that sort of short term inability to maintain your focus when you shift?
I've definitely had that happen. Like, I definitely forget what I was supposed to do. The other thing, like, and this really fucks with my brain, and I feel like this is something that maybe it's smartphone related because that roughly corresponds with me going into my 30s, the omnipresence of smartphones, or maybe it's just going into my 30s and my brain is worse. But, like, I forget, like, oh, did I just eat a string cheese or did I just want to eat a string cheese?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I forget the immediate small task that I did.
Yeah.
Or so, like, wait, did I just use the bathroom or was I going to use the bathroom?
Yeah. I have that with things a lot of times I won't know whether I've said something or I've thought about saying it. And every now and then I'll say something and then I'll be like, did I say that twice to you?
Right.
I usually haven't, but
I'm really afraid of doing that in a work meeting. And so like I'll err on the side of like, okay, I'll just keep my mouth shut. And I'm probably quieter than I should be a lot of times because I'm afraid that I've said something that I was thinking and I didn't want to say it again and sound like an idiot or like I wasn't paying attention, which I wasn't. I wasn't.
Right.
Paying attention.
I could, when I was a cigarette smoker, I could never remember if I had just smoked a cigarette
or if I was about to.
And that would, it would result in like, I would smoke like 5 in an hour, and couldn't tell you that I had smoked one that hour. I don't know I don't think that has anything to do with my smartphone.
So this has got to be a real phenomenon. We just don't know what it's called. It's got to be a real thing.
Yeah, I mean, I could find it.
If any of you guys have experienced this, maybe just tweet at us. You could use the hashtag, did I eat that string cheese?
Yeah. We have this game that we play. We're not playing it today, but it's called What's Shaken Baby Syndrome.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's just a series of like, I found maybe 40 syndromes online. I tell somebody the name of the syndrome and then they guess what it is. And I know one of them on that list is this thing about our inability in the 21st century to remember why we had entered the kitchen. That was the specific example, not the like sort of the overriding syndrome.
Yeah.
But I can't, I'll find it.
But the thing is, like, that's like a thing that's happening to people our age every day.
Yes.
And that's like a scene in Still Alice.
Yes.
Or like some movie
yes.
about a person losing their mind when they like walk into a room, like, why am I here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's like a big moment, it's just like an everyday occurrence for us.
Yeah. That's bad.
No,
right.
Definitely.
Right?
Bad.
That's very, it's like the physical version of like, I will always, like, I try to, like, I don't have a lot of like social media stuff like on my phone or anything, but
that's
like
good.
I'll have like Facebook like is usually like I can get to it from my computer and I'll go to it to do something specific and then will instantaneously forget why I went there, which I think is like a very common experience, but it's like scary to me that that's now transferring to the physical world.
Yeah.
It's like, to walk into a room and be like, did I mean to like check my messages or like respond to a friend request or like read an article about,
I think our brains do have multiple tabs open. Like, I think that is something, I think that's a way in which technology has changed us, but that it's not, that it doesn't actually work in terms of getting things accomplished.
Yeah.
That it's one thing when you have like 5 of them across the screen and you can sort of keep an eye on all of them, but the brain isn't designed to multitask in that way.
Mm-mm.
Right.
I don't think, at least.
No, I don't think so either.
I will also say, and this is, I speak as someone who has a podcast that we record every week, I find myself, whether having my own or whether guesting on someone else's podcast, is one of the few times where I have just an engaged conversation where no one is doing something else.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, like, I feel like every other situation, just like we've got our laptops open or we've got our phones open or we're just preoccupied by some bit of technology. And here we're just kind of like, I mean, I think it's just like courtesy to each other.
Right.
Where we're like, oh, well, we won't look at our phones for this. We're just going to focus on this conversation for the sake of the listening audience.
Yeah.
But it is like a very – it's a very different conversational environment than what we encounter in the real world.
Definitely.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I feel very different after like – you know, we'll record like a couple of these every couple of weeks. And it like – it – it almost feels like I've like – like been like meditating or something afterwards because it's like, oh yeah, we've been like focusing on one specific thing. I've been like looking someone in the eyes
I remember like I've noticed a couple of times on this podcast like somebody maybe will forget to turn off their cell phone and then it'll ring and then they're like, it's oh my god, I'm so sorry. Remember when we actually used to be that way in public with our cell phones, that like now it's the, you know, I think it's just taken for granted that if somebody gets a text while they're talking to you, they're going to talk to you and they're going to text, and it won't even be considered that rude unless we're unless we're with our, you know, our parents or grandparents or something like that. But among our generation, it's just accepted that like people are going to multitask in terms of communication.
Well, if anything, the social pressure is greater of, oh, if I don't reply to this text right now, like that's where the social pressure is.
Right.
So if I don't reply to this tweet right now, then I'm going to look like an asshole. So you're more worried about that than engaging with the person in front of you.
Well, and it's also like the way I was just like reading an article about how like technology now is like becoming more and more designed to like capitalize on that social pressure where like, you know, now that like every like most – so, like phones are set up so like you can see if someone's like responding,
Is
someone typing or like you can see if someone's seen your message. And I think that's like so manipulative and like a really bad thing for all of our brains, because so much of the time I feel this pressure to instantaneously respond, but so many of the things I'm responding to are like have no urgency.
No.
Yeah.
It's just like saying like, haha, or like, you know, cool, I saw that. I still like you, you know? It feels really...
In particular with texts, where like I always think with texts, like, it's become sort of this – it's become an all-purpose form of communication.
Yeah.
But let's be honest. Like if somebody shoots you a text and about something like truly serious, that seems kind of inappropriate. You know, like don't
–
you should go – you should make sure that I'm going to get this truly important piece of information. And then other times somebody will send you like a very long block of text messages. Like, why didn't you just email that?
Yeah.
Like it feels like we never really – we never really grasped the right form of communication for the different bit of information that we're trying to extend to another person.
What are your feelings about texting?
I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
It's definitely a lot of fun to be texting people.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good way to pass the time. I'm definitely have had some, like, been in some group texts and have some ongoing group texts where we're just like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah,
and it's just a thing
I
can check in every once in a while. But it's also, too, it can, you know, it can, like anything, just sort of take over your life.
Sure.
It's a net good. It's a very efficient way to communicate with people. So, that, like, it's a net good, but I think we just haven't quite figured out the right way to balance it, because it's just so easy for it to just be your top priority no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, I got to drop everything. I just got a text message.
Yeah.
Regardless of where you are.
Like, what I don't like about – I mean, I – first of all, my attitudes about technology are that of a very old lady. Like, I'm trying to, like, go with the flow because I, like – feel like I need, like, I don't want to be left behind by, like, the changing world. But I feel like my ideal form of communication is email, because because, like, you can't lose something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like that, like, once you've seen a text, it, like, kind of just, like, falls into your bucket of texts.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you can't respond immediately, then there's that risk of, like, forgetting.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas, like, with email, I just like that it's basically, like, having a stack of things to do. So, like, you cannot forget to, like, get back to somebody on something or, like, you know, do something. Whereas, for some reason, text, for me, it feels, like, way easier to forget to respond.
Oh, definitely.
Right. But the disposability of it, I think, is the feature. Like, you don't have to, like, I just get paralyzed, like, oh, fuck, I got to put something in the subject line.
Oh,
like, you know what I mean? Like,
just,
like, there's a formality to email that you, I guess I got to type thanks and my name at the end of this for some reason. And you just don't have to do that with a text. So,
That's true.
As far as, like, a one... just a quick answer to a quick question, like, I feel like text is superior.
Yes. No, that's true.
But I don't know. It's like we have all these methods of communication that we have to balance all at once. And now, like, if I get a phone call, I'm just losing my mind. Like, what are you doing? Don't call me on my phone. Are you out of your – you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. I've, like, had to confront my phone anxiety a little bit, because I've been, like – just like trying to do anything about like, you know, the election results. I've been like trying to like feel better by doing like a small thing every day. And so much of what people keep saying is helpful is like making a phone call. And so like I have like just like bucked so up and I've been like calling all these like representatives and like making a phone call to a friend.
I thought that's what you meant.
When people said you have to make calls, I stopped reading. I was like, okay, I'll make some calls. But I've been like calling all these like senators and stuff, and most of the time you just like leave a voicemail and like, you know, you like read that script that your like smart friend told you to read where you're like, you know, I oppose like Steve Bannon's appointment in the White House because he's a misogynist. Like, thank you, goodbye. Like, but sometimes a person will answer and it's fucking terrifying.
Right.
I never know what to say because I always feel like I don't know enough that if they were actually to engage me, like I wouldn't know how to like have a conversation. Like, and I just have so, like a couple times I've gotten a real person and I've just been like, hello.
Yeah.
I am an American citizen.
The thing that makes you sound least like an American citizen.
Yeah. I just like don't even know how to begin that phone call.
Right.
And so like I kind of just like again like sort of stumble through the script but pause to make it sound like it's conversational. And it like I think like the people on the other line kind of know how to deal because I think they're getting calls like this all day.
Sure.
But it's made me realize how much our conversational abilities and braveries have dissolved in the past 5 years.
Without edits?
Yeah.
It's tough.
There's definitely something, too, though, of I think what you're speaking to, Madeline, is like kind of how we compartmentalize anxiety and our fears because, you know, you're a performer and I'm sure you have, like anybody, you have some performance anxiety with just stepping on a stage. But I imagine you're more comfortable on a stage at the UCB Theater in front of 100 people than you are on the phone with some unseen individual.
Yes, absolutely.
Where the stakes are definitely lower in the second situation, but you're just like, you're just less comfortable with it. Because I hate phone calls. I would much rather just be unprepared and have to address an amphitheater than have to have a conversation with one person that I can't see.
Yes.
Like that drives me crazy and that makes me really, really – I dread it.
Because it feels like with a phone call, there is the potential to be like called out or – I don't know, like if you're performing, it's like the worst case scenario is like you're bad but nobody's going to be like – you're bad. Like, they're just not going to react, and then you'll go home, and like that's fine.
Well,
like,
even if they do, that's something you can play off of.
Yeah, yeah, and they're behaving badly by doing that. Yeah. Like, but like a phone call, it's like you feel very exposed because like there's more potential to address it if it feels like it's going weirdly or badly.
Sure.
I don't know.
I'm definitely very conscious of the fact that I'm talking when I'm on a phone call. I'm just like the words are coming out. This hole in my face is making sounds that form sentences. Like I feel like I'm in a hazmat suit of my own body.
Trying
to control it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because I'm sure there are lots of people who have no anxiety whatsoever associated with phone calls. I don't know why that particular fear is a case
weird.
With some people.
And I'm always, my fear is always like, do I sound crazy? I'm all like, if it's like one of those phone calls where you have to talk for, it's not just like sort of a, like, I don't know, like a straightforward phone call where you have to like explain how you feel about something or like, you know, explain an idea. I feel like I'll start a sentence and then if my thought lasts for like longer than like 2 to 3 sentences, my inner monologue will just be like, wrap this up. You sound crazy. Do I sound crazy? Can I stop? Is this too long? And then I'll always just like end up like kind of like sputtering out and being like, so,
I've become pretty good at them. I think I like that everyone else is so afraid of them. It like feels like maybe the only instance in my life where I have power. I don't know how to do though. Like it was just like you can hear someone because I'll often for my class for teaching pilot writing stuff, you know, somebody will have a question that I could either write them a really long email in response to, or I could just get them on the phone and just, you know, yell something at them for like a couple of minutes. And I choose the yelling one, both because it will save me time and because I just know that like, that's where I have the power. Like they're afraid of that phone ringing.
Oh, yeah.
And then when they, when like, what they hope more than anything is that they answer that phone and then it's just somebody there who will, you know, who will calm them, who will assuage all of their fears. And I don't give that to them. I'm just like, hey,
you're
just
a
like, I'm a monster. Yeah. And just like, hey, let's do this, you know? And then I'm in control. And I think that's why I teach the class in the first place, because I like to be in control.
But I like this power move of just like, oh, I'm going to be the guy who controls the phone call. Like, that's an interesting – I wonder if I can force my mind to adopt that and start being like the alpha phone call guy.
You could try it. I mean, it definitely – like if you start out with like a certain level of aggression, it's not inert, you know. Like it will continue moving forward.
It's like the phone call version of like a firm handshake.
Yeah, it's very much. It's exactly. That's a great way of putting it. Yeah.
Hello, Aunt Kristen. Yeah, shut the fuck up. Happy birthday.
Yeah, I mean, I will admit that I haven't called a lot of Aunt Kristen, so I don't know how well it works. But when you're calling just like some 22-year-old who doesn't know how to write a pilot, works like
right.
Crazy. Should we play the game?
Should we play a game? Yeah.
You ready to play a little game, Nick?
Of course.
So this is a game. It's basically the fuck, marry, kill game.
Oh,
but on this podcast we call it cock, lock, or block. So cock meaning like you fucked it, lock meaning like you married it, and then block meaning like. What you guys can't see is I'm putting the hand up like ladies do.
Lot of ladies put their hand
in
up?
In my face. Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Even though this is more abstract, it seems more violent.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not with people. What we do this with, we do this with like a variety of different, sort of header subjects. And in this case, we're going to do it with extreme death. So this game's called Cock, Lock, or Block. Cock meaning fuck. Mm-hmm. Meaning married, and block meaning kill.
Yeah.
I guess it is a little more violent for some reason. Yeah. Why is
that? And also, even though we changed it to different words, it's still not a literal game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It doesn't perfectly translate.
It's multi-layered.
Yeah, it's got a lot going on.
But I got to say, it is Guy Ritchie's best film.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Cock, lock, or block. Extreme death edition. Extreme death. The first category is murder-based death.
Ooh.
Cock, lock, or block. Oh, I keep looking down at the piece of paper that is not written up.
It really doesn't.
Shooting versus stabbing versus strangling.
Okay.
And to explain, one of these things we would like to
You're choosing... choosing one of these as the way that you'll be violently murdered.
So lock is the way we'll die.
Lock is the one you're choosing to die. Yes,
and then
grazed
by a bullet.
No, you'd be like, yeah, I guess that'd
you
be okay.
Feel you'll dabble. You might. It's
I
okay.
dabble in the
okay.
in death.
Pawn that off on a loved one.
Yeah, we can play that. All
right,
and then what is block?
Block
is never. I don't want it
you
even a little bit. Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Okay, so we got.
We got stabbing, shooting, and strangling.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll go.
Okay.
Wait, hold on. I want to make sure I get this right. Cock is a loved one. Lock is me. Block is get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't believe we're doing this to a loved one.
I know. It's
strangle my
makes
loved
it more
one.
Complicated.
It does,
really.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, because you want to be noble and say I want my loved one to have a less painful death. So let's maybe
one of
not
them,
say that.
One of them is like so. Cock would mean that like it's okay if I die this way, but I'm not like rooting for it.
Okay, that's
lock
better.
Would mean like I'm rooting to die this. I guess
if you have
either.
To pick
right.
one.
If you had to choose.
If you had
or
to
if you didn't have to
one.
Choose. Just if you got to choose.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So this is like a gold, silver, right, and bronze, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically like rank them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I would say I want to block strangling.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
breathing is one of the only things that makes me calm. And like, so like just no, like if the, my death is that I can't breathe, that just like is... horrifying.
Yeah.
It's horrifying.
That
yeah.
strangling or strangulation or drowning, yeah. something Oof. Like that, is Oof. That's horrible.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
I would say cock stabbing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be pretty painful.
Yeah, it sounds really painful. Mm-hmm.
But I think there are ways you can get stabbed and die pretty efficiently.
Yes.
And I would lock?
Yeah.
I would lock shooting.
Because it's quick?
Yeah, just not in the face.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I want to leave. I'm vain enough where I want to leave a beautiful corpse. but I'm enough of a coward where I want to die painlessly. So I'll take like a gunshot right in the heart.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, a gunshot in the heart. Yeah, done. I'd love it. I agree. Mine match up.
Okay, so now, just for argument's sake, let's say that bullet's going for your face. Ah. Does it change? Do you change your order?
Well, look, if I have to be shot in the face or stabbed in the face,
you're stabbed in the body or shot in the face.
Stabbed in the body or shot in the face.
I think I'd take stabbed in the body.
Okay. Okay.
Like stabbed in an organ. It would have to go right into a vital organ. I'm not talking about stabbed into the guts much and then I'm bleeding out.
You'll hear like you hear these stories like I mean you don't, maybe you don't hear them but you know it'll be like guy was like stabbed like 37 times and he lives like it's like why did you go to the trouble of living?
Right.
Well, that's what happened, not to always bring up the Manson murders, but I feel like there was this like guy who wasn't like one of the first guys this drug dealer called Lotsa Papa. They thought they killed him.
Yeah.
And then he wasn't dead, right?
Oh.
I think they stabbed him a bunch and they were like, he's dead. And then in turn of events later on, he was like, I'm not dead. I'm going to court. Like
Rasputin.
Yeah. Rasputin didn't die forever.
Yeah. It took a long time to kill Rasputin. Do you know the story of Rasputin's death?
I've heard all the possibly real, possibly mythologized.
Yeah.
Rasputin.
It's quite a few
stories, but I think I would take the vampire death of just like stab me once sharply in the heart and put me out of my misery.
So
Madeline. I would agree, because strangling, I feel like I kind of was thinking like which one of these things will like traumatize your body so quickly you won't really feel pain. Like I feel like a lot of people get shot and they're like, oh, like I didn't feel it because it was like such a shock to like you. It's painful afterwards, but if you die, then you never experience that pain. But it feels like strangling. Also, like someone's got to squeeze your neck so hard to cut off your airways, which feels like it would be like just wildly painful and like not jarring enough that you wouldn't be aware of it the whole time.
Right.
Yeah. So that, so I'll block strangling, cock stabbing, and I'll lock shooting, even in the face.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I would even get shot in the face.
Yeah. I think it's unanimous.
Yeah.
Definitely. For me, the hard thing with strangling, you know, there's that line in Catcher in the Rye where he says about a fist fight, what scares me most is the other guy's face. With the strangling, there's like I just imagine looking into someone's eyes while they do that, and those eyes are like. For me, that's like when I'm just thinking about it, that's the visceral fear.
Yeah.
You're like thinking of strangling you from the front.
Yeah. Mm. Like just on top of me, like holding my neck, you know, pushing down on my windpipe and just like having that look of evil that like the last thing I'm going to see is someone who's not only killing me but wants nothing more than for me to die. That's like the last thing I see is the person who wants me to. Where in getting shot, like there's just something that's inherently disconnected about that. So I'm going to say that's going to be the lock, just because I feel less murdered somehow. Like it feels like the gun did it more than, and I know that whole thing, like people, but it feels like the gun was really, wherein like with stabbing and strangling, it's somebody who's like repeatedly making this decision, you're going to die and I'm going to do it. Yeah. And I get that thing about like stabbing one time in like a vital organ and it just ends. My fear is that like that's just never the case.
Sure.
But we're going to go for this little hypothetical. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're just going to assume one stab does the job, and that's going to be worse than getting shot with one bullet and better than getting strangled, for however long it would take. I guess probably with the strangling, you go quickest if it crushes your windpipe as opposed to if you're just relieved of the ability to breathe.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's got to be ugh. All right, should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, real quick on the serial killer front and related to stabbing, I remember with the Zodiac murders that there was that couple who got killed in the woman got killed in the park.
Yeah.
But the man was stabbed a shitload of times and he didn't die. Ugh. But the woman was stabbed a bunch of times. But the thing that's not in the movie Zodiac but is in the book about the murders is that she took like hours to die. It was just like an ambulance got there and I think she died on the way to the hospital. It was just like It just sounds – stabbing just sounds very, very bad. So maybe – I don't know. Maybe I'd err on the side. If we're not saying it's not an ideal stabbing scenario, that might flip me to strangulation just because that feels a little bit more quick and certain.
Yeah. It feels like, there's more room for error with stabbing because nobody can see where they're – like someone might think they're stabbing you right in the heart, but like they could be like up inches
That's
off.
True.
Whereas like somebody like knows if they're strangling you to at least like squeeze your neck.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead, Ben. I derailed you. Sorry.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, you derailed me in a way that this podcast was designed for. without getting
the
derailed.
A series of morbid tangents.
We could have called it that. Okay, so this next one is going to be nature-based. Mm-hmm. So you already sort of answered one of these, but we'll play along. So now we're talking drowning. Mm.
Right.
Versus burning.
Ooh.
So, like, you know, you're on fire.
Jesus.
Versus freezing.
Ah!
So freezing to death,
so
burning
hard.
To death, drowning to death. This is a very hard one.
This is hard.
And if you want, we can just skip ahead. If you guys feel like this is unanswerable, and also if it causes any anxiety, you know, I don't want you guys.
Can I use my lifeline?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. I want to do the 50-50.
Okay.
Eliminate one of the options.
Okay. how does it do I eliminate it?
Yeah,
or
you
eliminate.
Okay. The computer eliminates one of the options.
Yeah. Okay. So, should I eliminate? You said
any
like,
of them.
You had already mentioned drowning.
Yeah. So if
so
you
let's
if this was
drowning.
Okay, all right. Because if this was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, they would just eliminate the one you'd already said was an option.
I feel like to
fuck with your brain.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So now I've got burning versus freezing.
Yeah.
I think I'm going. I think I'm going to block burning and lock freezing.
Okay.
Sorry,
I think burning is a little bit quicker, but I think that from what I've read on pain thresholds, that's like one of the most painful ways to die. And from what I've heard about freezing to death is that the last bits of it are kind of serene. You start to feel very warm.
Hmm.
You start to go to sleep. So I think that might be a little bit more of a prolonged but ultimately more painless death.
Yeah.
Interesting. You flipped me. I was about to say that my feelings are the opposite, but actually the way you describe freezing to death, it sounds like kind of what you said you would prefer at the beginning of the podcast when you were saying like dying, you would love to just like have a moment to at least like reflect on like, this is what my life has been like. So if you knew you were freezing to death.
Yeah. And you're just going to go to sleep in the snow.
You like have a bunch of time to like look at the snow and think about all the things you did and all the people you care about. That doesn't sound horrible.
Yeah.
No.
It's probably pretty bad.
Yeah, you're right, right.
No, I think it sounds lovely.
Yeah.
I think everybody should just go to the snow and freeze to death.
Guys, let's crank the AC in here. Yeah. Turn the studio into our tomb.
Guys, at home, what would be your most serene extreme death?
Yeah.
Let us know. I've gone back and forth. I mean, to me, There are so many ways to look at it, and I have a hard time. I have a hard time picking just one method or one line of thinking. Like, on the one hand, I would definitely prefer to be cold than too hot. And I know this is like an extreme way of thinking of cold versus hot, but it is a thing. Like in my life, when it's too hot, like you know this past summer, for the last couple of weeks, we've had like 90-degree falls, and it's been like very overwhelming.
Uh-huh.
Then again, I did move away from Detroit expressly because I hated winter. So that's a thing.
Uh-huh.
We had talked on the Jess McKenna episode of this about that line that we couldn't ever figure out which documentary it was from, but that then was used in that Stars song where they say, when there's nothing left to burn, you have to set yourself on fire, which is about freezing to death in the wilderness. Mm. People who are actually freezing light themselves on fire. So there's an argument that could be made that when you're at that level of freezing that you actually would desire. But then again, if you were on fire, wouldn't you want somebody to dump ice cold water on you as well? So I think we'll just stick with whatever. So what you guys agreed on, right? That we're going to go with freezing over burning.
Freezing.
I'm going to take freezing over burning just because even if I burn my hand on like the stove or something like that, I would say it ruins at least 3 days of my life.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with freezing.
Great.
Okay. We've got two more, but let's just do one. It feels like we've Madeline, you've heard the other two categories. Do you have one you'd rather do? So it was So one would be like accidental type deaths,
okay.
And one would be like vehicular type
deaths.
Let's
do accidental.
Yeah, okay.
Because vehicular, there's another one that involves drowning, so I think it's redundant.
Can I just hear the vehicular options? We don't have to talk about them. I'm just curious what they are.
Car accident versus plane crash versus shipwreck.
Okay.
And now accidental type deaths, we've got choking versus slipping. Versus falling. So falling meaning, you know, great distance, like you fall out of a window or something, or like you hear those stories about, like, you know, college kids like getting too drunk on a balcony and the balcony collapse and they die.
Or like falling into the Grand Canyon.
Canyon. Falling out of a building.
Yeah. Okay.
And then slipping would be like, you know, slipping in the shower and you like crack your head open and you die.
Yeah.
Or like you slip on the ice and, you know, some place where you slip and then in all likelihood your head smashes.
It's a head injury.
Yeah. And then choking is just, we get that one.
Choking, yeah.
Hmm. Are we choking on anything in particular? This is mid-meal.
I guess since we're calling it most extreme,
okay.
In your mind, what would be the worst thing to choke on?
I guess like really hot fondue.
So it's gonna coagulate in your throat,
coagulating and burning you in your esophagus.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah.
All right, let's use that as the baseline.
Okay,
we'll say choking to death on coagulated fondue in your throat.
Yeah.
Fondue,
all right.
Yeah.
I would say I would block that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't want to choke to that. Again, it's a breathing thing. I just want to be able, you know, like ideally it feels prolonged and I can't catch my breath. That's going to make me crazy. And that just feels like I'm ending my life in sheer panic.
Yeah.
I think I'd cock falling and lock slipping.
Okay.
And I'd say I'm a pretty clumsy man.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good chance that slipping's how I'm going to go.
Oh.
Right.
And I could see it happen anytime. I feel like it's usually a thing that befalls seniors.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could see myself having a nasty fall the next couple of years, just tripping over something and conking my head.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, that feels like it's so sudden that when I've had concussions before, I've hit my head a few times, and when I've woken up, like, I don't even remember the moments before it happening.
Oh, wow.
So I feel like it can be just sort of like, I feel like that's what that death will be. It'll just be like, it's just out of nowhere, and then my life is just over, and that's just fine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You've had multiple concussions?
I had one documented concussion and another thing that I suspect was a concussion. But both times I like blacked out and like
gosh.
I don't remember the immediate beforehand, and then, you know, just woke up sometime later.
How did they happen?
Yeah.
One was when I was a kid, and this is when they were like, you definitely had a concussion, but we were on the playground. Apparently I tripped over my shoelaces and hit my head.
Oh.
This was when I was, I think, in fifth grade. And I don't remember any of that. I just remember going to school in the morning, and then I woke up in the doctor's office and threw up on my doctor. And then the other time was, I was more conscious for this one, but this was late at night. I ended up going to the ER and getting staples in my head.
Whoa.
But I had stood up in it was in the kitchen late at night, and like a cabinet door was open, and I think I was under the sink or something, but like stood up into the cabinet door and the corner of it like went right into my skull.
A lot of blood.
Yeah, there was a good amount of blood. And the thing about, have you guys gotten staples before? This is what I didn't realize about staples. Zig, you ever gotten staples anywhere? It will heal over the staples. So like the most painful part of it was that I had it had scabbed over these staples in my skull, and when they went to extract them, it was just like excruciating.
Oh, because they're pulling a staple out of your skin,
right?
Basically,
yeah, and also and they're ripping open a scab as they do it.
Oh my god,
it's really unpleasant.
That's crazy that that's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But it's also crazy that you said you didn't have any stories.
That was also that night when I was at the ER. I was in one of those semi-private rooms.
Yeah.
And, you know, like where it's just a curtain, and then there's someone else as close as I am to you, Madeline. There's someone else there just on a different gurney, and there's no there's no audio privacy.
Yeah.
So they were, you know, they're evaluating me, and then I heard the ER nurse go to the person next to me, and he was like, "Oh, what happened?" She's like, "Okay, you need to stop taking cocaine. You need to stop doing heroin. And he was like, oh, wait, what? Like, they said yeah, your blood test, you test positive for both. He's like, oh, that's crazy. Like, he's trying to play off. Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, that's weird. How did that happen? And then he was like, and then he also, I guess he was younger. He's like, oh, are you going to have to tell my parents about this? I was like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. But I think if you're using, I mean, this guy was obviously in a bit of trouble, but yeah. Like, I feel like there is something, that instinct of like, oh, I'm so clearly guilty, but just yeah. to feign ignorance of it is just yeah. such a funny instinct.
Whoa. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. How did that happen? So weird.
Yeah, we
like the same way you like react after like you weren't paying attention and you like hit someone's car in a parking lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
right.
Oh, weird. You came out of nowhere. Yeah.
So, Madeline, what are you going with?
I think okay. So this one's a little tricky for me because okay, I'm also gonna block the choking because
right.
again, it just seems like prolonged and like you know what's happening for too long before you die.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I will lock falling, even though it's one of the ways that I'm most terrified of dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just something seems like a little more spectacular about it than like slipping in the shower, which seems too sad.
Yeah. Right.
It seems like anybody who I leave behind would be very sad either way, but I think they would be like, I think the reaction if I like fell into the Grand Canyon would be like this insane thing. It was so crazy,
right?
But Madeline was standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon 1 minute and then I turned around and the next minute she was gone and she fell into the Grand Canyon. It was crazy.
It's very cinematic.
Whereas I think if I like fell down in the shower, people would just be like, it's really so sad. She just slipped on some soap and now she's gone. Like, I think it would be weirdly more difficult for people to process, like, an everyday, like, an in-home slipping death.
Right. Yeah, yeah. When people are, like, eulogizing you, if your death was you slipped in the tub and you conked your head in the toilet tank.
Yeah. It's
and
too sad.
That's, like, just, like, that's just, like, one notch of embarrassment above you choked yourself to death while beating off.
Yes. And it like really highlights like I think it would make the people around me also more fearful in general because it's a death that could happen at any time. Like it would like I think make everybody feel like life is so fleeting and vulnerable. Whereas I feel like if I fell in the Grand Canyon, people would be like, well, you gotta be careful at the Grand Canyon.
Also,
which is an okay way to, you know, live the rest of your life.
These days, that's going to show up on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to see Madeline Walter's tragic, untimely death in a fail compilation.
Yeah, like, woman falls into Grand Canyon, screams the whole way down. And then, like, Ben could have a lot of money. He could probably have all those YouTube dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that would be better.
Okay.
What do you think, Ben?
Incidentally, I would take all those YouTube dollars. This is the one instance where I'm not allowing the other Ben to have been your husband. It's just, I'm getting all your YouTube money. Yeah, it's tough. I think we all have the same line of thinking, but maybe different logic for it. Like in my mind, I don't want to slip in the shower for a variety of reasons, but one of them is similar to Nick's desire to not be shot in the face for vain reasons.
Oh.
That like when you slip in the shower, they find your body's all waterlogged. You probably drown to death. You're like really very disgusting.
Ugh.
When you choke to death, you probably look more or less normal by the time all things like in terms
you
of
get purple
like the,
or no.
Well, you probably get purple. They can probably like. I assume they dislodge the gumball from your throat or whatever it was before they bury you. But I'm assuming that they can kind of get you back to normal and then like, you know, relatively speaking, at least with makeup and then it's nice for your family. And then the beauty to me of like there's two things that I think are best about falling to your death. One, there's almost no chance that if you get like a real good fall in that you're actually dying upon impact. You probably died of shock well before that,
oh,
which
really?
Is nice.
Okay.
So that's like a nice thing. thing.
Oh, I didn't
and then
know
two,
that, yeah.
Your body is just smithereens. Like, there's just nothing to be done with you.
Right.
And then we just like they have a nice memorial for you, and nobody has to like look at your corpse at all.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like a big deal to me. Like the thought that like that that when I finally do pass, that like no one gets to like look at me anymore. Like
so-
I don't want. But if they are gonna look at me, I want it to be the choking version, not the waterlogged, like,
shower,
you know,
yeah.
The bloated sort of, yeah.
So you want to basically one day just disappear.
More or less. I mean, as opposed to looking mangled, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I would say, I would rather be, also part of what you said, like the you know, just like a very magnanimous sort of like, I don't know. It's like I would hope that someone said that I was doing something heroic when I fell into the Grand Canyon,
yeah.
And I just like fell in. At least that's how they would like tell the story. Like I think that it's a big deal that like you know when your loved one dies, you come up with like a nice narrative for it. And
yeah.
So I would if I fall tragically to my death in the Grand Canyon, or like I fall out of like I fall out of like a window on like the 20th floor or whatever. Like tell people I was like. Trying to help a sick bird or something.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what I'm going to go with. So I guess we agreed on all of these.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think if we're going to compile the ultimate death, I think it would be what at this point we'd be freezing to death in the Himalayas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then
fall off
a mountain.
Yeah. Have your frozen then, body fall off.
Right, and then someone shoots you out of the sky like they're shooting skeet.
Yeah, the bullet lands in your mouth and you choke to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's something that we should consider for this podcast down the road is coming up with the ultimate death.
Oh.
I think that's an interesting thing to talk about.
It is an interesting thing to talk about.
Feels like a Steve Harvey Family Feud question.
Yeah.
We asked 100 Americans, "What's the ultimate way to die?"
Shot out of a cannon, Steve. Nick. Thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. You were a great guest.
What a treat.
Oh, it
had
was
a great
really
time.
Great. Is there anything you would like to plug? Any places you would like people to follow you?
At Nick Weiger on Twitter. Check out my podcast. I do it with Mike Mitchell, Doughboys. Ben Axelrad has been a guest in the past. Battle of Walter will be a guest in the future. It's the podcast about chain restaurants, so it's a way to very much about death indirectly because we're killing ourselves with terrible food. But there are new episodes out every Thursday on Feral Audio. So check that out.
And it's a great podcast.
God bless you.
Recommend it.
Thank you so much, Nick.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you, guys.
This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
You can follow us on Twitter at Definitely Dying. And until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.